Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Ray Suarez, and this is On Point. The 90th Academy Awards will air this Sunday night. Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water leads the pack with 13 nominations, including Best Score, the watery background music that you're listening to right now. But it's in a tight race for Best Picture, with Lady Bird, Get Out, Dunkirk, and many more. What might win? What should win, but won't take home the Oscar? This hour On Point, pass the popcorn. Time for the Academy Awards. You can join us on air or online. Which Oscar-nominated films have you seen? Which should win for Best Picture? Best Actress and Actor? Are you sure they'll announce the right winner this year on the very first try? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We've got a great panel this hour from Kansas City, Missouri. Sean Edwards joins me, film critic for Fox 4 News there in Kansas City, co-founder of the African American Film Critics Association. Sean, welcome back to On Point.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
And from studios of KBIA in Columbia, Missouri, Alyssa Wilkinson joins us. She's in town for the big True-False Film Festival there. She's a film critic at Vox. Alyssa, welcome back to you as well.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for having me.
I am the furthest thing from an expert on this part of American culture. But I tell you, this is one of those years where you think, oh, you know, the Academy, by expanding the number of pictures that can be nominated for Best Picture, really created some possibilities, really got it right. Sean Edwards?
Sort of. So maybe 50-50. I mean, they selected 9 out of a possible 10 Best Picture movies. And out of those 9, maybe 3 of them really don't belong. They got maybe 6 of them right, but they left
really?
Like 3 or 4
movies on
the
table. What was straining to make the list, in your view?
Well, if I had it my way, I would have added The Florida Project, I would have added Wonder Woman, and I would have added Mudbound easily.
Okay, taking the place of, which were the weaklings?
To me, and I would have definitely got rid of The Post. I think The Post is the weakest of all the 9 nominees. I'm not a huge fan of Dunkirk, and I'm not a huge fan of Lady Bird.
Alyssa Wilkinson, what do you think?
I agree that The Florida Project should have been on that list. I'm pretty sad that it wasn't. I love Lady Bird, but I definitely would have pushed Darkest Hour off the list as well. And I agree with Mudbound. That was quite a film. And I think a lot of people kind of missed it because it didn't really do theatrical release, but it's been on Netflix. And it's just really a remarkable piece of work.
Is there an argument to be made for, let's say, tightening up the rules so that what a movie is clear as we head toward awards season?
Well, the rules are clear. I mean, it's not about tightening up the rules. It's about the members of the Academy opening up and being more diverse and being more open-minded about what they select as Best Picture, because the rules are clear. As long as you have a theatrical run, a film is eligible. And movies that have been released by Netflix have had theatrical runs, which makes them eligible. So it's about people opening up and being more diverse to, like, the way that the changing world and the way that people watch movies and expanding what we consider a best picture. So it's not about the rules. It's about the people who actually nominate and vote.
I agree. I enjoyed The Darkest Hour, but I was a little surprised when it was nominated for Best Picture. And I enjoyed Dunkirk, and I was a little surprised when it was nominated for Best Picture. And even though I did not enjoy Phantom Thread, which is the longest 2-hour movie I've ever sat through, I kept looking at my watch thinking, this must be a 5-hour movie. I understand why it was nominated for Best Picture. I thought, oh God, this is exactly the kind of thing that gets nominated, even though I am hoping that this 5-hour movie ends quite soon. The costumes were gorgeous. The score was phenomenal. The acting was great. Really, the actress who was nominated for her role as Daniel Day-Lewis's sister and, of course, Daniel Day-Lewis himself were both terrific. And even though I couldn't wait till it was over, I wasn't surprised at all that it was nominated. Any Phantom Thread fans
well,
out there?
It wasn't quite that bad.
I mean, the first time I saw it, I was actually shocked it was over when it was over. It felt like it went by in a snap, and I didn't love it the first time around. But I have to say, it's the one on the list that I'm surprised got nominated. So Darkest Hour is very, very classic kind of Best Picture movie. It appeals to the older, you know, demographic of the Academy. Phantom Thread is a weird little movie that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense on the first go-round.
It screamed artistry. I mean, there was a lot of artistry in the filmmaking.
I mean, the Academy is known for nominating what we would probably call middlebrow movies, which are often the ones that don't kind of confuse the viewer. And Phantom Thread, like Paul Thomas Anderson's movie The Master, is a confusing, enigmatic film that doesn't let you in very easily. And that's pretty much the opposite of what the Academy usually favors. And also, Phantom Thread was released right under the wire. I was really surprised that it got as many nominations as it did. I don't know what you think, Sean.
No, I agree with you. It was the big surprise on nomination day. I was actually surprised it received as many nominations as it did. I understand why it made the list. I mean, the large percentage of the movies that were nominated for Best Picture, you can tell, are still from the old guard of the Academy. These movies all skew sort of middle of the road. You can tell that older people voted on them. They didn't take very many chances with the nominees. I mean, there are only like two or three movies out of the nine that you would consider movies as sort of like were like groundbreaking or deserve maverick status. But a lot of these movies are so run of the mill. I was just in shock that people liked The Post as much as they did. It's the world's most boring movie ever. It's like it's like Steven Spielberg cloning himself and directing a movie. It was just so stale and non-eventful.
Well, you put Meryl
you put Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks.
They weren't good, though. They sleptwalked through the entire movie. They weren't good. That's not an example of good Meryl Streep or good Tom Hanks.
Yeah, but Meryl Streep can get nominated for literally anything she does.
If they had a category for best cinematic sleeping pill, The Post would win.
I had the advantage of seeing Darkest Hour in a small seaside town facing the English Channel, with a fairly old audience, which was good because I could check who actually won the war, so I don't have to wait for the sequel. let's talk about Call Me By Your Name after this. It tells the story of a romantic relationship between Elio, played by Timothée Chalamet, a 17-year-old living in northern Italy, and his father's American assistant, Oliver, played by Armie Hammer. Here's a scene from the movie toward the beginning of their friendship.
What does one do around here?
Wait for the summer to end.
Yep. What do you do in the winter? Wait for summer to come?
Well, we only come here for Christmas and some other vacations.
I thought you were Jewish.
Well, we are Jewish, but also American, Italian, French, somewhat atypical combination.
Call Me By Your Name is a love story between Timothée Chalamet and Armie Hammer. Its inclusion in the Best Picture race tells me what, Alyssa?
I think it's a really lushly directed film with three really outstanding male performances. It's a visceral experience to watch it. And I think that means that people were really, that is one case in which I think they were really responding to the artistry of it. And also to just, it's hard to watch it without feeling affected by what sort of the arc of the relationship and by the performances. So I think that's a lot of what is going on with the nomination of that film. But again, that one's one that I don't think has a shot of winning at all. But I was glad to see it show up on the list.
Sean Edwards?
I love this movie. The biggest problem with Call Me By Your Name is the fact that Moonlight won last year.
Yep.
If this were a different year or this movie were released at a different time, it would clearly be on the edge of winning Best Picture. It's the most artistic of the movies. It's probably one of the more emotional of the movies. And it's just a fantastic watch and an example of great cinema. I mean, everything about this movie worked, from the acting to the cinematography to just the story in general, just created such human emotion that, I mean, it deserves to be in this category. And you could almost argue that it deserves to win, but it's not.
Do the electors go sit down with their paperwork or sit in front of their computer thinking those kinds of thoughts? Well, Moonlight won last year, so therefore this gay love story this year can't win? Do they actually consciously think that way?
They do. And if you read these, you know, Oscar voter things, they say that. And you will hear that from people who vote in the Academy. You know, the Academy's huge, and it's made up of lots of people with lots of different ideas about what makes for a good movie, and also about what kinds of stories get told. And to them, Moonlight and Call Me By Your Name are the same kind of movie, which is wild and insane. And but that's how Academy voters
think. Because they're not.
Right. They're not at all.
Yeah.
Except for that one incidental thing. Yeah.
Exactly. No, it's they put these movies in these categorical boxes, which is totally unfair to the art. But these two movies have nothing to do with one another.
They're both great, though. We're talking about this year's Oscars showdown, and you can join the conversation. What do this year's nominations tell you about where Hollywood is headed on diversity and representation? Is the hashtag MeToo storyline the big winner this year in Hollywood? We're at 800-423-8255. Here's Sufjan Stevens with the song Mystery of Love, up for an Oscar for Best Original Song from the movie Call Me By Your Name. I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point. This podcast and following message are sponsored by PRI. What would make you happy? Winning the lottery? Your post getting hundreds of likes? Hear real stories and discover the latest research on The Science of Happiness, a podcast from PRI and the Greater Good Science Center at UC Berkeley. Hosted by award-winning professor Dacher Keltner, each episode highlights research from the groundbreaking science of compassion and gratitude, plus practical tips you can use to seek out happiness in everyday life. Subscribe now wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Join me on NPR's Ask Me Another as we challenge contestants and celebrities to nerdy word games, music parodies, and punderful trivia. Find us every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Remember me. Say goodbye, remember me.
This is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez. That's Remember Me from the Oscar-nominated animated movie Coco. The song is also up for Best Original Song. We're talking about the Oscars, which air this Sunday. You can join the conversation. What movie resonated with you? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Alyssa Wilkinson is with me, film critic at Vox, along with Sean Edwards, film critic at Fox 4 News in Kansas City. And our next stop, Peachtree Corners, Georgia. Timothy's on the line. Timothy, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Ray.
Welcome.
I wanted to make a point that I thought Logan and Hugh Jackman were fantastic, and they weren't included. I would have included those. And my other point would be Coco. And I mean, if Star Wars is, say, 95% CGI, what's the difference between that and Coco? To me, Coco was the best movie of the year.
Has an animated movie ever been nominated for Best Picture, just straight up Best Picture, rather than Best Animated Feature?
I believe so. No, there's been one. There has been one. I have to look that up, but I think there has been one animated feature nominated for Best Picture. Not many, but there's been one.
Maybe it was Fantasia.
I think so. Don't quote me on that. Okay. Don't quote me on that. But it's tough, and animated features are unfairly penalized.
That's right. Yeah, and I mean, people talked about WALL-E getting robbed of that nomination back in the day as well. But a lot of what happens with the Academy, I think, as we were saying about movies like Call Me By Your Name, they also put animated films into categories sometimes, as if they're, you know, for children or whatever, so they're not worthy of the big prize. It'd be interesting to see how that shifts over time. And it is interesting on the point of Logan to note that that did get a Best Adapted Screenplay nomination, which I think is richly
well deserved.
Yeah, it's a great screenplay, actually. I recommend looking it up and reading it. It's very funny and very well written just as a screenplay. And also, it's hard to take a visual medium like a comic book and turn it into a film that really works, I think, on the page. So I think that's a well-deserved nomination.
Because we live in a wondrous age of data and finding things out quickly and right away, Beauty and the Beast in 1991 was the first animated film ever nominated for Best Picture, but it was followed by Up in 2009 and Toy Story 3 in 2010. From our website, Sam writes, Three Billboards is the odds-on favorite, but it doesn't seem to have a lot of fanfare. I thought it was fine, but interestingly, the third or fourth best film McDonough has been associated with. Rob writes, hard choice for me. Shape of Water was the most creatively told story this year, but Three Billboards had great performances. John writes, Dunkirk was the best war film since Saving Private Ryan. It deserves the nomination. I wish Blade Runner and Ryan Gosling would have been nominated. The post was blah. And Garrett adds, if Margot Robbie doesn't win Best Actress for I, Tonya, the awards will be as rigged as Tonya Harding's early skating competitions.
I don't know about that one. I don't know about that.
I did love
That's
her
a
performance,
big statement.
But I think Frances McDormand has that in a lock.
Yes.
Well, Get Out.
She deserves it. She was incredible.
Getting a lot of buzz. We should spare some time for Get Out. It could perhaps be the biggest upset for the Best Picture category. Daniel Kaluuya plays Chris Washington, an African-American man who goes to meet his white girlfriend's parents for a weekend in their secluded estate in the woods. In this scene from the movie, Chris calls his friend, Rod Williams, played by Lil Ray Howery, and tells him his girlfriend's mother hypnotized him to get him to stop smoking.
I remember she called me off guard, right? But it's cool because I'm cured. It worked.
Bro, how you not scared of this, man? Look, they could have made you do all types of stupid shit. Barking like a dog.
Flying around like you a pigeon.
Looking ridiculous, okay? Or, I don't know if you know this, white people love making people sex slaves.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're not a kinky sex family, dog. Yo, and it's the black people out here, too. It's like all of them missed the movement.
Because they probably hypnotized.
And since seeing Get Out, I thank every TSA officer at every airport I fly in and out of. Let's talk about this movie, which came out early in the awards season. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's considered a handicap, but it has legs, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it came out in February, and I think the last time a February film won Best Picture was The Silence of the Lambs, which was a long time ago. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I think there's so many great things about this film. I love it so much. But one thing was just that people weren't expecting it to be what it is. You know, we thought, oh, it's a comedy. It's from Jordan Peele. You know, I saw Keanu. I've seen Key and Peele. And this is just on a completely different level with an amazing performance from Daniel Kaluuya, but then also these amazing supporting performances. And the fact that it stayed in the conversation the whole year, I think, tells you a lot about how good this film really is.
And Sean,
that's like my criteria for best picture.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just saying, my criteria for best picture is a movie that changes the landscape that people talked about literally all year long.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is Get Out? Is it a horror movie? Is it a satire on a horror movie? Is it social commentary? Is it all of those things? What do we call Get Out?
Well, yes.
It's all of those things and more.
And a comedy, too. I mean, it's a funny, funny film. But,
it is funny.
But it's funny in the way that makes you kind of want to crawl under the table, or made me want to crawl under the table more than once. So, yeah, I would say yes to all of those things. But, you know, it is a horror film. It's obviously a horror film. And that kind of film just often gets categorized, again, as sort of a genre. But this one transcends genre to be more than just what it sort of looks like on the surface.
I rarely go to the movies where I actually can hear in a crowded theater people catching their breath and saying, oh, and things exclaiming in a way that you can hear. And I think that's the mark of a good picture.
Mm. No, it's a fantastic movie. I just like the fact that not only was it a very successful story, because it's a great story, the fact that they literally made this movie for peanuts and it made a ton of money globally, which is always a good thing. But the fact that this movie just sort of created a new dialogue among people who saw the movie and even people who didn't see the movie. I mean, it sort of like took our culture by storm. And I like when a movie can do that, which is why if there's going to be a surprise on Sunday night at the Oscars, this is it. I mean, because for me personally, this is the movie that should win Best Picture, it will win Best Picture, and it has to win Best Picture. I mean, I just get excited talking about it because it was just such a tour de force, and the fact that, like we said, came out of nowhere made it even more impressive and interesting.
The Shape of Water has the most Oscar nominations this year at 13. Best Picture, Best Director, a score of actor nominations. From the trailer, Giles, played by Richard Jenkins, interprets for Elisa, played by Sally Hawkins. She's mute and communicates through sign language. She's a janitor at a top-secret research facility who has formed a unique relationship with a merman who's held in captivity. She explains to Giles why she connects to the creature.
When he looks at me, he doesn't know how I am incomplete. He sees me as I am.
And David joins us now from Ithaca, New York. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Sean. Hi, Alyssa.
Hey, how you doing?
How are
you
all doing?
So handicap the Oscars for us, David.
Well, it seems most people are guessing that either Three Billboards or Shape of Water are going to win. And they, like Get Out, are dealing, although they deal indirectly with sort of racism and the sort of hot-button issues in the national dialogue right now. Get Out is the only one that does that centered around a black character. Like, there's a strong supporting character in Shape of Water, but I think Shape of Water and Three Billboards both do it in a pretty clumsy way. I mean, you know, the whole relationship in Shape of Water with the sea creature, the swamp creature, it just doesn't work for me. And I think there was a smarter way to deal with, you know, someone brought here in chains against their will that didn't have to be so indirect and just so bizarre. Like, the dance number was bizarre. The relationship between them and the sex in the shower scene, just all very odd.
Well, I think it's supposed to be odd, David. He's a god from the Amazon.
That's not bad in and of itself. I think it just also didn't work. I mean, if the creature had more personality, and if, you know, we'd seen more interaction between them, I suppose that relationship might have made sense. I'm all for the odd. My taste is sort of odd, but it just, I don't know, it felt very, very flat to me.
No, I think you're onto something as far as the development of the relationship between the two main characters. Sean Edwards, this is 13 nominations is a pretty big deal. Does all this foo-for-ah?
Well, they're 13 well-deserved.
They are well deserved.
I mean, I don't have a problem with the story because it's a fantasy. And I like the themes and the messaging of the movie. And Guillermo del Toro, I mean, he's a beast when it comes to directing. I mean, this is the best directed movie out of the nine, technically. You know, step for step, scene for scene, frame for frame. This is just a gorgeous film that just speaks volumes to how we deal with diversity in a very unique way. And that's what I loved about it. He's able to tell this story in such a different way, which made it such a fascinating watch.
And those individual performances, whether it's Sally Hawkins, who has that beautiful expressive face and is acting without talking, which is unusual enough. It's happened before, but it's unusual. Richard Jenkins finally getting his due, playing his terrific character. And Octavia Spencer getting yet another nomination. We'll go to Nashville, Tennessee next. Logan's on the line. Logan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. How y'all doing today?
Great, Logan. What's on your mind?
Great. So I am a big fan of Shape of Water. I have followed Guillermo del Toro for a long time. I will say I don't think it's as much of a tour de force as Pan's Labyrinth was, but it had a lot of the same sort of notes ringing through it. And I just think it did a really good job of like representing otherness versus kind of the powers that be. And I was sad that Michael Shannon didn't get a nod for this one because I thought he did a great job representing this just kind of pure evil force. And he's always been good for those roles. And I was just sad to see him not get nominated for supporting actor as well.
Michael Shannon's agent, if you're listening, try to get the guy a role where he's not a really, really bad guy. But I think, Logan, you're absolutely right. His malevolence, it practically jumps into your lap off the screen. But he was overlooked, as Logan suggests.
You know, I've never been more surprised that I liked a movie than this one, because I usually am not on the Del Toro train. I respect his films, but they never really reach me. I didn't even really like Pan's Labyrinth very much. And this one, another like great note about it is that it really draws on classic Hollywood in many different ways. There are classic Hollywood films referenced in it. There are direct sort of marquees with classic films in it. And so you really get this thing that approaches an old school classic Hollywood romance, you know, between a mute woman and a fish man, which is just an added level of fun for me. So I agree. It's a fairy tale. I don't want to demand realism of my fairy tales, but I do want to draw off of them what they're trying to tell me. And this one just worked for me. I had to go back and watch it a second time to make sure I wasn't just, you know, in the midst of film festival delirium the first time I saw it.
I thought the technical aspects of the movie were fabulous. Mm-hmm. The weird, unusual apartments, the flooding of the apartment and the leaking into the movie theater, all that stuff, the visual trickery, the lighting, even the pier scene at the end, the sets that evoke the early 60s and the Kennedy era and the cars. I mean, that kind of stuff was terrific, too.
And, you know, a lot of that was not digital.
Yes, good
stuff. That first scene where everything's underwater, sort of as the voiceover is happening and it's before Sally Hawkins' character starts her day, that was shot almost entirely practically, meaning they didn't use CGI. So that is remarkable that they pulled that off and that they would try to shoot it that way in the time that we're living in. Yeah, it's an achievement.
Let's take one more stop before the break to Surrey, Maine. Elaine's on the line. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Ray. I want to bring up what I think was the performance of the year and see what your panel have to say about that. And that would be Sam Rockwell's tour de force in Three Billboards, which for me was the performance of the film, too. The journey that you go on through his character, where first you hate him and you think he's a stock redneck, and then you think he's the rapist, and I don't want to put spoilers in my spiel here, but he blew me away, and I want to know what your panel has to say about his performance. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Elaine. Quick thoughts, and then we'll pick up on Three Billboards after the break.
I think this is a really stacked category.
No, it's a great performance.
Yeah. No, go ahead. But it's a stacked category, and, you know, he's good. Everyone's good in this category, I think.
Sean?
Well, I would say everyone's good in this category except for Christopher Plummer and All the Money in the World. That's where Michael – he took Michael Shannon's slot. Like, I would not have nominated him for that. But, no, Sam Rockwell is excellent in Three Billboards. I wouldn't say it's the performance of the year because Frances McDormand, who's in the same movie, is equally as good. But the acting helps that movie a lot.
And Woody Harrelson got a lot of notice as well for his performance. Did that get a nod?
He's good.
Yes.
Yes, yep. He did.
Yeah, he got nominated. Yes.
All right, we're counting down to the Oscars. Join the conversation. Do you want to see more talk of politics, of Me Too, Time's Up, color-coded costumes on the runway on Sunday? Or are you dreading it? We're at 800-423-8255. Here's Mary J. Blige with Mighty River from the movie Mudbound. It's up for Best Original Song. I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point. To heal this
Before we get back to the show, we'd like to ask you about you. That's right. We want to learn more about our listeners with a short survey. It's anonymous and easy. Just go to WBUR.org/survey to complete the survey right now. That's WBUR.org/survey. This survey will be tremendously helpful to us. So thanks. It all means
this is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez. That's Stand Up for Something from the movie Marshall. It's up for an Oscar for Best Original Song. We're talking this hour about the Oscars. You can join the conversation. Give us your predictions. What drove you to the theater this year? 800-423-8255 is the number. Follow us on Twitter. Find us at Facebook. We're talking with Sean Edwards, film critic at Fox 4 News in Kansas City, and Alyssa Wilkinson, film critic at Vox. Frances McDormand is up for an Oscar for her performance as Mildred in the movie Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Mildred is a mother who challenges local authorities to solve her daughter's brutal murder. In this scene from the movie, she tells the sheriff, played by Woody Harrelson, he hasn't done enough.
Could pull blood from every man and boy in this town over the age of 8.
Their civil rights laws prevents that, Mrs. Hayes. And what if he was just passing through town?
Pull blood from every man in the country, then.
And what if he was just passing through the country?
If it was me, I'd start up a database. Every male baby that's born, stick him on it. And as soon as he'd done something wrong, cross-reference it. Make 100% certain it was a correct match, then kill him.
Yeah, well, there's definitely civil rights laws prevents that.
Burlington, Vermont is our next stop. Emily, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, hi. Thank you for having this. I think the Oscars are really a fun, magical, escapist kind of thing. And maybe it's because I'm calling from pokey old Vermont, but never was there more a year where we all wanted to just escape into the realm of movies and make believe. I think that they did a really great job with the Billboards movie. I think it was sort of a theme of impulsivity, justice through impulsivity and immediate reaction, and then justice through process. And I think that there were some scenes in that that just held people in the theaters. There's a scene where one of the police officers.
Oh no, Emily, you were just about to make your point. Emily has disappeared in Burlington, Vermont. Maybe, you know, maybe it's in response to calling it pokey old Vermont, the cell in her area dropped.
It might have been a spoiler. I think it was the spoiler gods. The spoiler gods did it. She's about to give away a key scene.
But Three Billboards did get a tremendous amount of attention. Fully deserved, Sean Edwards?
Yeah, it's fully deserved. And can I say one thing? I think the many controversies surrounding the film is way overblown. I just don't get what people are talking about. Because there's been sort of like this decisiveness about the movie in terms of like racism and races, and particularly with the Sam Rockwell character. And I just feel that it's all overblown. I thought it was a well-done movie. I like the point of view. I love the perspective. The performances were fantastic. And the movie delivered. I like the final message.
And, you know, there are racists in the world, and some of them are going to be characters in movies. I'm not sure what you're supposed to do with that if you want to tell stories that ring true to experience and the life as it's lived
in
America.
I mean, I think a
lot of... No, I agree. I just did not get the controversy.
I think a lot of, and I, you know, I think most film critics wound up having to write a lot more about this movie than we ever wanted to this year.
And
I personally think some of the problem lies in the actual writing of the film, not on the granular level, but more on the arc. I think it doesn't quite accomplish what it says it sets out to do. And so I understand the criticisms. At the same time, I wasn't super high on the film when I first saw it. But at the same time, at Toronto, it took home the People's Choice Award, which is usually a pretty good indicator of what's kind of get through awards season. So, I think a lot of people saw the movie wanting one thing and got something else. Other people went in with no expectations and were perfectly happy with it. And then I think there's a critique to be made. But I agree that sometimes, you know, tempests grow larger in teapots. And this is definitely one of those situations.
I want to speak up for Lady Bird. Now, I'll admit it may be because I just went through the college experience for the last time. And maybe it's because I just took my last kid to college and became an empty nester, and it happens to be a teenage girl of the same age. Lady Bird got me, reached out and got me. It's nominated in 5 categories, including Best Picture and Best Director. It looks at a complex mother-daughter relationship. The movie opens with Lady Bird, played by Saoirse Ronan, and her mother, played by Laurie Metcalf, alone in the car, driving back from checking out local colleges.
I want to go where culture is,
but
like
how
New
in the
York,
world did I raise such
or
a
at least
snob.
Connecticut or New Hampshire,
well,
where writers live in the
get
woods.
Get into those schools anyway,
Mom.
You can't even pass your driver's test
because you wouldn't let me practice.
The way
enough.
That you work, or the way that you don't work, you're not even worth state tuition, Christine.
My name is Lady Bird.
Well, actually, it's not, and it's ridiculous.
Call me Lady Bird, like
Christine.
You said you would.
You should just go to City College. You know, with your work ethic, just go to City College and then to jail and then back to City College, and then maybe you'd learn to pull yourself up and not expect everybody.
That yelling is, if you haven't seen the movie, a reaction to Lady Bird jumping out of the moving car because she's so angry with her mother. In the next scene, she's wearing a cast. New York City is our next stop. Claire, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to mention a study recently published by San Diego State that found that females comprised of only 24% of the protagonists in the top 100 grossing movies of 2017, which is a 5% fall from 2016. So, you know, I'm so excited about the female empowerment storytelling, and I loved Lady Bird and seeing kind of that representation up on a big screen and the movements that have sprung up and Black Panther being one of a really powerful storytelling for women of color. But I think it's easy to feel that we're farther ahead than we are. And I think that those statistics kind of speak to that. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, Claire, I mean, is this a glass half empty or half full moment? Can you look at some of the great performances by women in this past year
Absolutely.
And say, this is terrific? Or do you look at that number and say, oh, man, down 5% and it already isn't enough?
Yeah, I say that it's terrific, but I don't think we can stop there. 24% is not a even close to equal number. And I think the only way we're really going to get there is by continuing to bring up that it's not there yet. So I am excited, and I am so celebratory of all the movies and the female roles that have been being put forward in 2017, but we're not there yet. So I do think that's important to focus on, too.
Well, hashtag OscarsSoWhite isn't that apt this year. Maybe we move to OscarsSoMale. Alyssa?
Yeah, I mean, Greta Gerwig. So first of all, Lady Bird, my favorite film of the year by far. Incredibly well-written, well-edited, well-directed, everything about it. And it rings very true. I'm an exact contemporary of the main character. But we also have to note that Greta Gerwig is only the fifth woman in Oscar history to ever be nominated in that in the Best Director category. And she wasn't nominated at the Golden Globes. That was an all-male category. And we can't forget that Dee Rees, who directed Mudbound, also basically got left out of the conversation entirely. Also an amazing female director. We had Patty Jenkins with Wonder Woman. But this was sort of a short... You know, it's a very small number of women who are directing these films, and I think we need to see more women doing this work if we really want to see women's stories represented on film. And that's not just people at the top. That's crews all the way down. You know, it's a very male-dominated business. And I think when we see better stories on screen, we'll know that more women are being hired to make them.
And Greta Gerwig, please don't stop acting. I loved you and Frances Ha, and the idea that I'm going to lose you to directing because there aren't enough women directors seems a little bit much. Sean, you wanted to say?
Yeah, I agree. I think far more opportunities need to be afforded to women. But with that said, I have to admit that I hated Lady Bird. I actually thought that Greta Gerwig's directing was so overrated because I thought Dee Rees, who directed Mudbound, should have been nominated. I actually like Kathryn Bigelow's. I thought Detroit was a much better directed movie. Patty Jenkins and Wonder Woman was a much better directed movie. I just could flat out not stand the lead character in Lady Bird. I rolled my eyes and screamed at the screen so many times. She was so annoying. I watched it again to make sure that I wasn't wrong, and I hated it even more. But I do believe that women deserve more opportunities in the industry. I just don't like Lady Bird.
Hey, you're allowed. Camden, Maine is next. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. I'm honored to be on your program and to talk to your guests. One of the films I am passionately sad about being overlooked was The Florida Project. Mm-hmm. Outside of William Dafoe's performance, it was an amazing film. The theater I was in was truly impacted by this. Talk about social commentary. The performance by this young girl, Brooklyn Prince, as much as I love Frances McDormand, she's kind of being Frances McDormand. I think she was better in Olive Kittredge. But please have your guests talk about The Florida Project. In every category, I think it should have been nominated for editing, directing. It was just so fresh. It's probably too ahead of its time.
Guests?
I completely agree. My goodness.
No, he makes a great point.
So good. Yeah, it's you know, it's like a small film. It's sweet and poignant, and I don't use that word lightly. And then it has these wonderful children, but then it's also underneath, there's just this current of sadness and also of commentary on class in America and sort of how poverty can hand itself down over generations. But on the surface, it's also just hilarious and heartwarming. I loved it. I hope Willem Dafoe wins his category, not just because he was great in it, but so that more people hear about this film and see it.
He is nominated for actor in a supporting role. Is it one of those cases where you end up as a supporting nominee when you're actually one of the main characters in the movie? Sometimes I can't figure out how they make that determination, whether you're an actor in a leading role or a supporting role.
Well, these are where the rules get loose, because it's usually determined by the studio that releases the movie, because they try to slot you sometimes where they think you have the best chance of winning, and it's not really clearly defined. But, I mean, I don't have a problem with him being slotted as best supporting actor, although he's primarily in most of the movie. But it's such a great performance and a great film. I think this film falls into the category of just being a little too real for most of the Academy members. It's just one of those movies I know they just did not connect with, which they should have, and it's unfortunate. And I agree. I hope Willem Dafoe wins so that the movie does get more attention, because these types of movies deserve to be seen by more people.
Let's hear from a man who we may not, if he's telling the truth, be hearing from much more. Phantom Thread is a quiet film about British dressmaker named Reynolds Woodcock. It's up for 6 different awards, including Best Picture. Daniel Day-Lewis is up for Best Actor for his portrayal of Woodcock. Here's a clip.
Chic? Oh, don't you start using that filthy little word, chic. Whoever invented that ought to be spanked in public. I don't even know what that word means.
It'll be sad for me as an unabashed fan of Daniel Day-Lewis to think that I may never see him on screen again. Sean Edwards, can we say a little bit about Daniel Day-Lewis before we go to a final lightning round?
Well, I will say this. I think Daniel Day-Lewis is pulling a Jay-Z. There's no way he's actually retiring. He made this statement, but I'm sure we will see him at least once in a movie again. But his performance in Phantom Thread is fantastic. It's just not his year. But for my money, he's the most incredible actor of my generation or perhaps of any generation. I can never not take my eyes off of him no matter what he's in. But I do not believe for a second he's retiring. And if he is, I will personally drive to his home and convince him that he needs to do at least one more movie.
Alyssa?
Yes. Yeah, I don't buy it either. How many times has Steven Soderbergh retired? I don't know. Right. People who are really good at what they do, I don't know, they find a way back in. But maybe we'll see him on stage or something like that.
Okay, Best Picture, Best Director, Actor, Actress, and Screenplay. Who are your picks, Sean?
Well, Best Picture, I'm going with Get Out. Best Director, Guillermo del Toro. Best Actor is going to be Gary Oldman. And Best Actress is going to be Frances McDormand.
And Original Screenplay?
Original Screenplay, I'm going for Get Out. This is the most competitive category out of all of them because you have Get Out, Lady Bird, and 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. All 3 deserve to win. But I think at the end of the day, when they open the envelope, it's going to read Get Out.
And Alyssa Wilkinson.
I'm hoping for 3 or for Get Out for Best Picture. I'm pulling for Jordan Peele, but I think it'll be Guillermo del Toro. I think we get Gary Oldman. I think we get Frances McDormand. And if we're in the original screenplay category, I will not at all be shocked if 3 Billboards wins, but I'm pulling for Get Out or Lady Bird. I'd be equally happy.
Well, now that everybody knows exactly who's going to win, we've probably driven a stake into Oscars ratings for the night. But, you know, they'll tune in to see who wins for sound mixing and makeup and hairstyling and best foreign language film. But yes, I should have done a spoiler alert, but now you know who's going to win the Oscars. It's been an interesting year. And because I'm teaching college instead of working in a newsroom this year, I actually got to see just about everything nominated, which was odd enough. Let me thank my guest, Sean Edwards, film critic and co-founder of the African American Film Critics Association. Sean, thanks a lot.
No, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. It's fun.
And Alyssa Wilkinson, film critic at Vox. Great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. From the movie musical Greatest Showman, here's This Is Me, up for an Oscar for Best Original Song. I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point.